And she does not say, I alone shall weave the garlands, or you alone will, but we shall weave them together. The soul cannot practice or acquire the virtues without the help of God, nor does God effect them alone in the soul without her help. Although it is true that every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, having come down from the Father of lights, as St. James says in James 1:17, yet this gift is not received without the ability and help of the soul receiving it. So the bride in the canticle said to the bridegroom, draw me, we shall run after you. Canticle 1:3. The movement toward good, therefore, comes only from God, as is declared here. But she does not state that he alone nor she alone runs, but that we shall both run, which means that God and the soul work together. This verse most appropriately refers to Christ and the Church, for in it the Church, the Bride of Christ, addresses him saying, let us weave garlands, understanding by garlands all the holy souls engendered by Christ in the Church. Each holy soul is like a garland adorned with the flowers of virtues and gifts, and all of them together form a garland for the head of Christ, the Bridegroom. The lovely garlands can refer as well to what we call aureolos. These are woven by Christ and the Church and are of three kinds. The first kind is made from the beautiful white flowers of all the virgins. Each virgin possesses her own aureole of virginity, and all these aureoles together will be joined in one and placed on the head of Christ the Bridegroom. The second aureole contains the resplendent flowers of the holy doctors. All of these will be entwined into one and set upon the head of Christ over that of the virgins. The third is fashioned from the crimson carnations of the martyrs. Each martyr has his aureole of martyrdom, and all of these red ones woven together will add the final touch to the aureole of Christ, the Bridegroom. So beautiful and fair will Christ the Bridegroom be with these three garlands that the bride's words in the canticle will be repeated in heaven. Go forth, daughters of Zion, and behold King Solomon in the crown with which his mother crowned him on the day of his espousal and on the day of the joy of his heart. Canticle 3:11. She continues then, we shall weave these garlands, flowering in your love. The flower of these works and virtues is the grace and power they possess from the love of God. Without love, these works will not only fail to flower, but they will all wither and become valueless in the sight of God, even though they may be perfect from a human standpoint. Yet because God bestows his grace and love, they are works that have blossomed in his love and bound with one hair of mine. This hair is her will and the love that she has for the beloved. This love assumes the task of the thread in a garland. As the thread binds the flowers together, so love fastens and sustains the virtues in the soul. As St. Paul remarks, charity is the bond of perfection. Colossians 3:14. The supernatural virtues and gifts are so necessarily tied together in this soul's love that if the love should break by an offense against God, the virtues would immediately become loose and disappear. Just as the flowers would fall away if the thread of the garland were broken. Consequently, it is insufficient that God love us and thereby give us virtues, for we must also love him in order to receive and preserve them. She says they were held with only one hair and not with many, in order to point out that now her will is alone, detached from all other strands of hair, that is, from all extraneous loves. She clearly stresses here the value of these garlands of virtues, for when love is fixed solely and firmly in God, as she says, the virtues are also perfect, complete, and full flowering in the love of God. Then God's love for the soul is inestimable, and as she also experiences. Even if I wanted to, I could not find words to express the beauty arising from the interweaving of these flowers of virtues and these emeralds, nor could I describe the strength and majesty their order and arrangement gives to the soul, or the loveliness and charm in which this garment of variety clothes her. In the book of Job, God declares that the devil's body is like shields of molten metal, protected with scales closely knit and so joined that air cannot pass through. Job 41:6. If the devil, since he is clothed with evils, the scales that are bound and ordained one to the other, is so strong that his body is comparable to a shield of molten metal. And since all evils in themselves are weakness, how tremendous will be the might of this soul that is all clothed with strong virtues and has them so fastened and interwoven that no ugliness or imperfection can get between them. By its strength, every virtue adds strength to the soul. By its beauty, it adds beauty. By its value, it enriches her. And by its majesty, it imparts power and grandeur to her. How marvelous then to the spiritual eye will this bride soul appear at the right hand of the King, her bridegroom, in the charm of these gifts. How beautiful are your steps and sandals, O Prince's daughter, exclaims the bridegroom in the canticle. Canticle 7:1. He calls her Prince's daughter to denote her royal inheritance. And if he calls her beautiful because of her sandals, what will be the beauty afforded her by her garment? Not only does her beauty in this robe of flowers stir one's admiration, but the strength she possesses from the orderly arrangement of these flowers and the interspersion of both emeralds and innumerable divine gifts fills one with terror. On this account, the groom declares of her in the canticle, "You are terrible, like an army in array." Canticle 6:3. As these virtues and gifts of God give refreshment by their spiritual fragrance, so too, when they are joined together in the soul, they impart strength by their substance. As a result, the bride in the canticle, when she was weak and lovesick over not having attained the union and interweaving of these flowers and emeralds by means of the hair of love, desired to be strengthened by this union and asked for it in these words, "Strengthen me with flowers, surround me with apples, because I languish with love." Canticle 2:5. By flowers, she means the virtues, and by apples, the remaining gifts. Stanza 31, Introduction. I believe it is clear that by means of these garlands, interwoven and placed in the soul, the bride wishes to describe this divine union of love between herself and God. The flowers represent the bridegroom, since he is the flower of the fields and the lily of the valleys, as he affirms, Canticle 2:1. The hair of the soul's love is what unites and fastens her to this flower of flowers. As for the apostle teaches, love is the bond of perfection, which is union with God. Colossians 3:14. The soul is like the peg on which the garlands are hung, since she is the subject of this glory and no longer appears to be what she was before. But by the perfection and beauty of all the flowers, she resembles the perfect flower himself. This thread of love joins and binds God and the soul so strongly that it unites and transforms them. So great is this union that even though they differ in substance, in glory and appearance, the soul seems to be God and God seems to be the soul. This union is more wonderful than all that can be said of it. Scripture mentions something about it in the first book of Kings, in reference to Jonathan and David. The love Jonathan bore David was so intimate that it knitted his soul to David's. 1 Kings 18:1. If the love of one man for another was that strong, what will be the tie caused by the soul's love for God? The bridegroom, especially since God here is the principal lover, who in the omnipotence of his fathomless love absorbs the soul in himself. More efficaciously and forcibly than a torrent of fire would devour the drop of morning dew, which usually rises and dissolves in the air. Undoubtedly, the hair that joins them must be thin and very strong, since it penetrates with such forcefulness the parts it binds. Accordingly, the soul describes in the following stanza this beautiful hair. You considered that one hair fluttering at my neck. You gazed at it upon my neck, and it captivated you, and one of my eyes wounded you. Commentary. The soul wishes to express three things in this stanza. First, she wishes to explain that the love which binds the virtues is no other love than solitary and strong love. For it must be this, if it is to preserve them. Second, she wishes to state that God was greatly captivated by this single hair of love when he beheld it alone and strong. Third, she wishes to declare that God was intimately taken with love for her when he marked the purity and integrity of her faith. And thus she proclaims, You considered that one hair fluttering at my neck. The neck where the hair of love was fluttering signifies fortitude. This hair of love weaves the virtues together, that is to say, love with fortitude. In order to preserve the virtues, it is not enough that love be alone. It must also be strong, so that no contrary vice on any side of the garland of virtue may be able to break it. This hair of love binds the virtues in such a way that if it breaks where one of these virtues lies, it will immediately, as we said, fail in regard to them all. Just as all the virtues are present there where one is, so they all fail where one fails. And she says that it was fluttering and flying about at her neck, because in fortitude of soul, this love flies to God mightily and speedily, without anything detaining it. And as the breeze causes the hair to flutter and fly about the neck, so too The breeze of the Holy Spirit moves and arouses the strong love to make its flight to God. Without this divine breeze to stir the faculties to the exercise of divine love, the virtues do not produce their effects, even though they are present in the soul. In saying that the beloved considered this hair fluttering at the neck, she points out how much God cherishes a strong love. For to consider an object is to look upon it with a very particular attention and esteem. And the strong love urges God to turn his eyes to look at it. And thus the following: You gazed at it upon my neck. The soul makes this affirmation to show that God not only values this love of hers because he sees that it is alone, but that he also cherishes it because he sees that it is strong. With God, to gaze at is to love, just as to consider an object is to value it. She repeats the word neck in this verse, in speaking of the hair. You gazed at it upon my neck. Because, as we mentioned, this is why he loved her so much. He saw that her love was strong. Thus it is like saying, you loved it upon seeing that it was strong, without cowardice or fear, and alone without other loves, and fluttering about quickly and fervently. Until now this hair had not captivated God, because he had not gazed at it, nor had he seen it alone and detached from other strands of other loves, appetites, affections, and pleasures, nor did it flutter about alone at the neck of fortitude. But after love, through mortifications, trials, and penance, becomes so detached and strong that no force or occasion can break it. Then God looks at it and takes the flowers of these garlands and binds them with it, since it is strong enough to keep them fastened in the soul. In the explanation of the four stanzas that begin, O living flame of love, we mentioned something about the nature of these temptations and trials, and about how deeply they reach into the soul, that she might come to this fortitude of love in which God unites himself to her. Having passed through these tribulations, the soul has reached such a degree of love that she merits the divine union. Hence, she says, and it captivated you. Oh, how worthy of utter admiration and joy! God is taken captive by a hair. The reason this captivity is so estimable is that God wished to stop and gaze at the fluttering of the hair, as the preceding verse asserts. And as we pointed out, for God to gaze at is to love. If in his infinite mercy he had not gazed at us and loved us first, as St. John declares, 1 John 4:10, and descended, the hair of our lowly love would not have taken him prisoner. For this love was not so lofty in its flight as to be able to capture this divine bird of heights. But because he came down to gaze at us and arouse the flight of our love by strengthening and giving it the courage for this. Deuteronomy 32:11. He himself, as a result, was captivated by the flight of the hair. That is, he was satisfied and pleased. Such is the meaning of the verse. You gazed at it upon my neck, and it captivated you. It is indeed credible that a bird of lowly flight can capture the royal eagle of the height, if this eagle descends with the desire of being captured. Continuing, and one of my eyes was wounded you. The eye refers to faith. She says she wounded him with only one eye, because if the soul's faith and fidelity toward God were not single, but mixed with some other human respect, it would not attain to such an effect as to wound God with love. Thus it is only one eye that wounds him, just as it is only one hair that captivates the beloved. And so intimate is the love with which the bridegroom is captivated by the bride in the single-hearted fidelity he beholds in her, that if the hair of her love captivates him, the eye of her faith so tightens the bonds of his captivity as to cause a wound of love. This wound of love is the result of the great tenderness and affection with which he loves her, which means he reintroduces her further into his love. The bridegroom, in addressing the bride in the canticle, makes this statement about the hair and the eye. You have wounded my heart, my sister. You have wounded my heart with one of your eyes and with one hair of your neck. Canticle 4:9. In this passage, he declares twice that his heart was wounded by the eye and by the hair. The soul accordingly mentions in this stanza the eye and the hair, for through them she denotes her union with God in the intellect and the will. Faith or fidelity, signified by the eye, resides in the intellect, and love, signified by the hair, resides in the will. She is then united with God in the intellect through faith, and in the will through love. She glories here in this union and thanks her spouse for this favor received from his hands. She also values it highly that he should be satisfied and captivated by her love. Consider the joy, the happiness, and delight the soul finds in such a prisoner, she who had been for so long his prisoner.